Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this, Lucas. Who wants the ring?
Flashbulb sparkles here underway.
Cannot play with him. Cannot win with him. Cannot coach with him. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or a woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Manning the first. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience. Good
Skittles time. You're never too old for Skittles.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Boston Sports Beat. I'm your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan. I am, as always, joined by my colleague, Xander Manning. Xander, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good. How are you doing there, Jesse?
I'm doing just fine. So let's get right to it. We're going to start things off with one Boston sports team that is still fighting in the playoffs, though possibly not for much longer. That's the Boston Celtics. We talked about what underdogs they were against the Cleveland Cavaliers going into the first round of the playoffs, and we both spoke rather optimistically about how many games they might take. I said they might take two. You said they might take the series. Both our predictions are looking pretty unlikely at the moment, as the team is down 3-0 against the Cavaliers. So, Xander, what have you thought of the Celtics' play so far in this series?
I'm going to be completely blunt about this straight up. They've played like complete and utter crap. I'm sorry. I had a lot of hope for this team. I thought they really had a shot to put up a fight against the Cavs, but the regular season numbers are just regular season numbers right now. Did they take 2 out of 3 out of the season series against the Cavs?
2 out of 4 and against backups both times.
Exactly. They took 2 out of 4. They were played great in the regular season. But now it seems like they just don't care not putting up a fight. It's almost like they're laying down and it's almost looking like the old Celtics. I don't want to say that, but it's honestly very true right now. They're not looking good, and I'm sorry. It's not looking good.
Well, I got to be honest here. Everybody knew this was a long shot against Cleveland because Cleveland is such a strong, well-rounded, and talented team. But the Celtics have actually, in my view, they've actually held their own. I mean, the last two games they lost by single digits. After losing by 13 in the first game, they haven't really been blown out like people kind of expected they would. So I think they've put up a fight in that sense. I don't feel like they're laying down. I just feel like Cleveland has been just such a stronger team. I mean, obviously LeBron James is going to put up his 20 to 30. Kyrie Irving was incredible his first two games, just dropping everything he shot. And then Kevin Love finally came out in game 3 and was 6 of 10 from three-point range. I mean, how are you supposed to fight that? Yeah, you know, how are you supposed to fight that level of talent? And I think the Celtics have done okay for their current level of talent, facing off against a talent like Cleveland. But, you know.
I will admit that. Yes, they have put up a fight. That is true. But still, they haven't done what they needed to do to win this series. They haven't done their job. They haven't made this a selfish series. They haven't done what I said they need to do. They need to make this a selfish attack. They need to shut down everyone else, but they have not looked good. Like you said, we were talking about this yesterday, Jesse. They have not looked good down low. They have not looked good getting the rebounds. They've let guys walk into the zone and get those amazing glorified dunks LeBron does like it's his job. They let Kevin Love shoot those threes. They let Kyrie Irving come in for the layups. They're not putting up as much of a fight as they should be.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face it, unless you've got a guy like Paul Pierce on him, LeBron James is virtually impossible to cover. And like you said, the team is weak down low. They don't really have that one, you know, down low presence that they really need, like a Kevin Garnett or a Kendrick Perkins. They don't have that anymore. And so obviously Kevin Love is taking advantage. And then Kyrie Irving, those first two games was just unreal. Like, it didn't matter how tightly he was covered, he was draining everything. So, like I said, just perhaps too high a level of talent for the Celtics to keep up. But the fact that they have, you know, kept up to a certain extent, not necessarily won any games, but held Cleveland to single-digit wins the last couple times out, I think says something about the promise of this team going forward. And with that, I want to ask you, this may be a different question from what we originally had planned, but what I want to ask you is, if the Celtics do lose the next game on Sunday, which is at 1 p.m. at home, again, you can tune into ABC to check it out, but if the Celtics were to lose that game and get swept, what do you think that does for the team, like morale-wise, like going forward-wise? What do you think getting swept would do? You know, granted that it's against such a talented team and they've held their own to a certain extent, what do you think getting swept would do to this team?
I mean, for me, really, I think it really all depends. It's all going to depend on how badly they do lose. If they get blown out, then this team's morale is going to go down very far, because they worked hard and then they get swept and they get dominated and swept. And they fought for their position, and I think it'll just go down a lot. But I say if they put up a fight and maybe they lose in overtime or they lose in the last 30 seconds against the Cavaliers and they push LeBron to make that shot and they make it a selfish game like they need to, but then they still lose, then I think that they realize, okay, we accomplished something. We made the playoffs. We put up a fight against one of the best teams in the NBA. That's great. But if they get blown out, I don't see how they can find really any positives out of this. They made the playoffs, they lost. That's all it would be. But if they put up a fight, they made the playoffs, they lost, but they didn't lose by default. They lost because they weren't the better team. That's why.
Yeah. No, I do remember going into the end of the season, some people were saying, you know, maybe the Celtics shouldn't fight for a playoff spot. Maybe being dominated by a team like Cleveland could just ruin all the morale of these young players. But, I mean, the fight that they're putting up each and every game is admirable in my mind. And I feel like there's a lot of positives to be taken away. I mean, obviously there's plenty of negatives, and there's plenty of work that the team still needs to do in the off season. But I feel like the fact that this team, which was in a rebuilding phase at the start of the season, managed to make it to the playoffs and is now holding one of the best teams in basketball to single-digit wins, I think that says something, given where they are. And I think as long as they keep that in perspective, and I think they can, under the guidance of Brad Stevens, he's been a phenomenal coach this entire year, I think if they keep things in perspective, I think they can take some positives away from this. You know, not be happy about being swept, but still take some positives moving forward.
The season.
I'm sorry, what?
Honestly, let's just think about where they were at the end of last season. They were out of the playoffs last year. They were demoralized. They were shocked, and they did not feel good about themselves. And then they come in at this season saying, all right, we're going to draft a few guys. We're going to sign a few free agents. Let a few guys go. All right, we're just going to let this season see where it takes us. They end up at the seventh seed going into the playoffs. And like you said, putting up a fight against the Cavaliers. Granted, I don't think they're playing very well, but I wouldn't say they're playing absolutely horrible. They're not playing as well as they could, is what I'm trying to say. But they should still be happy with what they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think these losses are necessarily due to any kind of effort or due to them, you know, I don't think it's that them not playing as well as they could. I think it's just a matter of, as you were saying before, just the better team is winning. I mean, the Cavaliers are just a significantly better team than the Celtics right now. And, I mean, you know, I was optimistic last week. I said maybe they could take a couple games. At this point, I'd be happy if they could take one. You know, that's what a lot of people were saying. Hey, maybe they can steal one game, but who knows. But that's going to do it for this first segment of the Boston Sports Beat. Stick around. We've got plenty more to talk about. Red Sox, Patriots, all good stuff. So please stick around. We'll be back right after this. Now I'm here. Now I'm here. Now I'm here. Welcome back to the Boston Sports Beat. I am still your host, Jesse Mayfield Sheehan, still joined by my colleague, Xander Manning, and we're going to move things over and talk about the Boston Red Sox now. Team is, you know, still fighting in the American League East. I believe they're currently in a three-way tie for the lead. Don't quote me on that, but yes, I think it's, you know, it's a very close, tight American League East race at the moment, and the Red Sox, you know, right in the thick of it at the moment, which is good to see after the disappointment of last year. But in these past few games, one apparent weakness has come out, and that is the bullpen. In the last three games, each time one of the Red Sox relievers has blown a lead that they have, that they held. So, Xander, my question to you is, what's going on with the bullpen? What's wrong with them right now?
You can point a bunch of fingers at the fact that they're adjusting to new roles now that Koji's back. To point fingers at the fact that they're too young, that they're too old. But no. But what I'm going to point at is that there's no middle ground for these guys. There's some old guys, there's some young guys. But there's really no balance between them. Like, there's no. The age is, like, just trivial, but the experience is really what's mattering right now. They have a lot of guys who they saw that had a good spring, and they assumed, okay, that was good. That's great. We'll bring them up. Like guys like Anthony Vivaro, I understand they acquired him from the Braves to solidify the bullpen, but I really don't think that he's ready, honestly. He's a guy who's not ready. They're pitching with guys who had a good spring, but they're not pitching with guys who are ready to pitch in the major leagues right now, or some guys that need some more time in the minors. I honestly think Mujica needs a little more time in the minors right now. I think they need to get that this bullpen is just inconsistent and it's a little troubling right now, honestly.
It certainly is a little troubling, and I think part of the problem, and I wrote an article touching on this, was the starting pitchers right now, while they are doing better in my mind than a lot of people give them credit for, the one legitimate struggle they are really having right now is pitching deep into games. I mean, Buchholz and Porcello seem to be handling that. They're going 6-plus innings in almost all of their outings. But you look at these other guys, I think Masterson and Kelly have only gone a max of 6 innings, and they went 6 innings once each. And then Wade Miley has yet to even make it through the 6th inning in any of his outings so far. So you can sort of see how the bullpen could get sort of overworked in that sense. Like, I've seen this with the Red Sox before, you know, where they have to rely so heavily on their bullpen that, you know, the relievers start to cave a little bit. You know, you need to be able to give those guys a break once in a while and just have your starter tank through it. And the current starters haven't shown that ability. Like, you know, Buchholz and Porcello have been fairly solid in this area. Although Porcello could certainly do a little better in terms of the runs he's giving up, he is going deep into games. You know, those guys are more reliable at present moment to go deep into games. But guys like Masterson and Kelly and Miley, you know, those guys have to figure out how to pitch deeper into the games, you know, especially given how the bullpen has been playing of late.
Also, not just like support for like the starters right now, but they need run support for the bullpen too. Like that game that they lost in the ninth inning to the Rays, they only scored 2 runs in that game. I mean, I cut them a little bit of slack because the Rays, no matter what, no matter where we're playing, no matter when in the season, they always give us trouble. They always give Red Sox trouble. Excuse me. But that's a given. I mean, it's going to happen. They give us trouble. But still, you need to get more run support if you actually want to win those games. They won the first game in the series, and I was optimistic. But they also scored a ton of runs in that game. They had a lot of
They won the first Tampa Bay. Hold on a second. They won the first game in the Tampa Bay series 1-0.
Okay, I was wrong. I'm sorry.
They scored plenty of runs in the second game and then lost 7-5. So I hear you on run support, but the Red Sox in general have been pretty good offensively. You know, I think they're averaging, you know, 4 or 5 runs a game. That's pretty solid for an offense. The problem is, you know, you never know which part of the pitching is going to let you down. And then sometimes the two just aren't merging. Like you see, you know, games where they're not scoring and the pitching is only letting up 2 runs, like that 2-1 loss. And then you see, you know, other games where the pitching would only give up 1 run and they score 7, like against Baltimore this past Monday. You know, so sometimes it's not merging, but for the most part it has been. You know, I do feel optimistic about this Red Sox team at the moment. But, like I said, the starters need to go deeper into games and the bullpen needs to be more reliable if they're going to make it far this season.
Yeah.
All right. So we're going to move on to the next question. And that is concerning Shane Victorino. I'll give you 3 guesses as to what's happened to him. I'm not even going to wait for that. He got hurt again, Everybody. He has suffered a hamstring injury. They don't expect him to be out long, but given his long history of injuries and given all the depth that the Red Sox have in the bullpen, what kind of effect do you see this having both on the team and on Victorino's prospects going forward, Xander?
First of all, I just want to say, Charrington, this is why you trade him in the offseason. You don't want to have to deal with these injuries. You have enough people to back him up. Why don't you? I don't understand why he didn't just get rid of Victorino. There are a handful of teams out there who would definitely take Victorino with open arms. I could probably list off about 3 teams right now who would take Victorino. I don't understand why they didn't dump him yet. But it may sound like I'm completely bashing on him. I'm completely getting rid of him. But honestly, I feel like this is a blessing in disguise. I feel like this can give Brock Holt a lot more playing time, which he completely deserves. He came out firing this season. He came out hitting the ball hard. He came out getting those clutch hits. He hit a 3-run home run last night. Was it last night, 2 nights ago, something like that?
Yeah. Yep.
He was a clutch hitter for the Red Sox, and he can play anywhere on the field except for pitcher and catcher, maybe pitching if we're losing by about 18 runs. But
yeah,
he can play anywhere on the field, and I do not understand why you kept an aging veteran who keeps on hurting himself when you have a young player who hasn't gotten hurt very often, if at all, and can play right field like it's his job when he came up as a second baseman.
It certainly is interesting that they're not giving Brock Holt a lot of playing time. I mean, you look at his slash line right now, he's batting about .400. His slugging is in the .500s. So Brock Holt is hitting very well, but they're mainly saving him for whoever is being given rest that day is what it seems like. And as a result, he's played, you know, a little more than half the team's games, but he's missed a significant number of them just sitting on the bench. You look at guys like Victorino or even some of the backups in right field like Nava or Alan Craig. None of those guys are really hitting at the moment. They all have averages of about in the 100s range, and it's just, it is a bit of a mystery as to what they're doing with Brock Holt, because Brock Holt seems like such a great athlete, but who knows, maybe they know something we don't. If the question is, if Brock Holt plays, where do you put him? And at present moment, it seems like there's an opening in right field, but they're using that for other backups like Nava and Craig.
Which
I
mean, you know,
I see why they're using Nava, though. I guess I see why they're using Nava. They're using Nava for his defensive liability. I understand that he's a great defender. But really where you need a guy like Nava or you need a guy like Alan Craig is you need them at first base. Because Napoli needs rest every once in a while, and then who are you going to put over there? You don't have anyone. You need those guys backing up him at first. Maybe you put Craig at first since he's not exactly the most defensive-minded player and he's better off the bench, pinch hitting. And then you put Nava as a backup. But you need to put Brock Holt somewhere out in the mix in right field because he has both. He's great defensively, as shown by that excellent catch in center field last season. And he can hit the ball. You need to mix him in somehow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I've said this before. I never really understand taking a defensive-minded player over an offensive one in any other situation other than, you know, you're ahead and it's the eighth inning and you don't want to give up runs due to fielding mistakes. Aside from that, I really don't see the value of a guy whose best quality is his fielding capabilities, just because I don't feel like fielding makes that big of a difference.
What about a catcher?
In a game. A catcher is different. Catcher is always different because you want a guy that works well with your pitchers. Because the fact is the pitchers are key to a defense. You know, I don't necessarily care how effective a guy is at stopping players from stealing as much as I care about a guy that brings out the best in his pitchers, in my mind. Which, you know, again, I think takes even priority over his capabilities as a hitter, which is why you don't see a lot of great hitting catchers. Is because what you really want out of your catcher is someone who brings the best out of your pitchers. That's you know, how I stand on catchers in my mind. But for all other positions, I don't really see the value of taking a guy who's better defensively than offensively, you know, especially given where the game is right now, as it's turning into a much more defensive game. I feel like you need more offensive pieces to fight against that. That's just where I stand on that in my mind.
I mean, the one exception, though, I would say is maybe first base. Honestly, I mean, first base, you don't really have to range that much. The second baseman can cover that whole area. But at first base, you really need a guy who can scoop the ball and pick up the defenders and make those plays in foul ground if you need him to. I would say that's my one exception. I don't know about you, but I think first base maybe is an exception where you can have maybe a more defensive-minded player like Alan Craig. But
again, I only see that in the late time innings when you'd put Doug Minkiewicz in back in the mid-2000s. So I don't see that as a guy that you start. Yeah, no, as a backup, I understand any position, you know, having a more defensive-minded guy. But as a starter, it makes no sense to me. That's my two cents on that. But we're going to move on for now. We're going to move on to everybody's favorite, the New England Patriots. You know, still off-season, sure, but the NFL draft is starting this coming Thursday. So plenty of excitement surrounding that, as it always is. So it's such an exciting event. They made a movie out of it recently. But the Patriots, as the defending Super Bowl champions, have the 32nd pick in the first round. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about whether they'll trade up, trade down, what position they'll go for it with that first pick. So, Xander, what do you see the Patriots doing with this 32 overall pick?
I think it's really more of a question of what do they need to fill. And a lot of people have been talking about, oh, they need more receivers to back up Edelman, Amendola, like embrace more weapons. And I see the logic. I understand that. You want to have more depth. I get that. But at the same time, a good offense is a good defense. And you need defense. And I'm looking at it right now, the Patriots' projections. They're projected, their first pick in the draft, number 32, is Landon Collins out of Alabama, safety. And then it goes a defensive tackle, and then a guard, a defensive end, and then it goes a receiver. And I see where they're going with this. I see they're solidifying the defense, but frankly, I would switch the first two. I think they need to go for the defensive tackle first. I think they need to solidify that front line. I think they need to solidify the pass rushers and get guys who can get into the quarterback. That was one of their problems this past season. The quarterbacks were getting away with stuff that they shouldn't have. They had clear sacks, and they got away and got a few yards out of it. It's not okay. You need to have those guys who can lock it down.
Well, in that sense, I feel like you'd try to take an edge rusher, which they already did in the offseason, picking up Jabal Sheard. So I feel like, you know, I always feel like the Patriots could use more pass rush because they've never had that strong a pass rush, at least not in recent memory. But, you know, in terms of taking a defensive tackle, I don't see them investing a first-round pick in a defensive tackle 2 years in a row. I just don't see that happening. And there are a lot of question marks after the departures of Revis and Browner. There are a lot of question marks concerning the secondary. You know, and the Patriots, rather, have had some success drafting defensive backs early. Guys like, you know, Devin McCourty have worked out pretty well. You know, I feel the same way in terms of not going for the offense. Patriots offense is always going to produce as long as Tom Brady still wears the number 12 jersey. You know, I feel like you can, you know, try and make it stronger with more depth at wide receiver or more depth at running back. Some people have talked about them training up for a running back, you know, and I can see that. There's always going to be, you know, question marks, you know, regarding whether the team's receiving core or running back core is strong enough. But I feel like as long as you got Tom Brady under center, they're going to put up the points. He's going to find a way to put up the points. So I definitely agree with you that defense has to be the first priority, defense and offensive line, obviously, just because, you know, Brady could always use better protection. But I can understand to a certain extent the Patriots trying to take some defensive backs because, I mean, the only thing that seems to be solidified is Devin McCourty at that free safety position. I mean, who's going to be your strong safety? Is it going to be Pat Chung or Duron Harmon? Who's going to be your number one cornerback? I mean, is it going to be like Malcolm Butler or something? I mean, he played out of his mind in the Super Bowl, but, you know, when you try and put him in that position they had Revis and Talib the past few years, I just don't expect the same results, at least not yet. I don't expect the same results from him. So there's a lot of question marks regarding the secondary right now, I feel like.
Definitely a lot of questions with the secondary, but yeah, I still think they need more pass rushers. I mean, yeah, it is a priority. They need to get more secondary. I'd say that's the number two or maybe number one and a half because I feel like it could go either way. It depends what is on the market, who's still available, it's just going to depend on who's still available when it comes to their turn on the board and to see who they go for.
Yeah. And do you see them trading up or trading down at all? Just very quickly, do you think they make any moves like that?
I mean, I think it really depends on who they try to target with. I mean, what their objectives are going to try to be. I mean, they had Todd Gurley visit the Patriots earlier this week, and I would love to see him play for the Patriots. I just don't want him to turn to next Jonas Gray, show up, have a great game, and then boom, benched. But I could see them trading down maybe, but I wouldn't see them going out of their way to trade down. I could see them doing it if they got a good offer from a team, but I wouldn't necessarily see them going out of their way to get 10 pick or something like that. I see them maybe trading down to like number 20, something like that, 2018, somewhere in that range.
All right, well, we'll certainly see. You can check out the draft once again this Thursday. So certainly plenty of excitement surrounding that draft, and we'll certainly see how it goes. But that's going to do it for this episode of the Boston Sports Beat. You can follow myself and Xander on Twitter. Xander's at ZM Sports Report, and I am at JGMS88. That is going to do it for this episode of the Boston Sports Beat. Thank you for listening.